following is a live presentation of CITR News.
CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Katie Comley.
Good evening. In news this week, UBC's Museum of Anthropology has suffered the theft of some of its most precious items, and scientists appeal to the Ministry of Health to release an important report to the public. We'll have all this, plus your weather forecast, coming up this half hour right here on News 101. But first, the relative quiet of UBC's Museum of Anthropology has been rocked by the recent theft of gold artwork by famed Haida artist Bill Reid. In total, 15 items were taken from the museum. 12 pieces were Reid's artwork, including bracelets, brooches, cufflinks, and boxes made out of gold, as well as 3 golden-colored Mexican art objects by a different artist. The fear of both the university and museum officials is that the gold pieces may have been stolen in order to be melted down due to their high value. Campus RCMP have begun their investigation into the matter in conjunction with museum staff, but are failing to comment on how exactly the heist took place. In a joint statement made by the university and the museum, MOA Associate Director Moya Waters called the theft of the items a loss of cultural patrimony for the whole of Canada. And this just in, a reward has been offered by the University of British Columbia for $50,000 for the return of the items to museum. So if you have any tips or information leading to the return of these items to the Museum of Anthropology, please contact either UBC, the campus RCMP, or the museum itself. Now, with a look at more local and provincial news, here is News 101 reporter Charlotte Nobles.
Following an increase in violence at Vancouver's beaches, police will be upping their presence throughout the beaches this summer. Over the weekend, several people were injured in a number of fights at English Bay Park in the West End. Police had to shut down the beach on Saturday night after one man had his throat slashed in a fight involving about 30 people, according to police. Several other incidents provoked a need for pepper spraying. Inspector Ted Scheinbein said a fight involving approximately 100 intoxicated young people took place last night, which caused many calls to the police from concerned citizens. The violence isn't just a problem in Vancouver. A Penticton fight resulted in the death of a 27-year-old man on Saturday evening at Skaha Beach. At a police briefing on Monday, Constable Tim Fanning promised police would have a plan in place shortly to tackle the problem of drunks and fighting this summer. He also speculated that the warm weather over the weekend may have contributed to the problem by encouraging more people to stay out late on the beach.
Vancouver City Councillor Peter Ladner wants the public's input on what to do with the aging Burrard Street Bridge. The original aim of the renovations was to make the False Creek crossing safer for cyclists and pedestrians. Unfortunately, the plan to renovate the bridge by widening the sidewalks has experienced major cost overruns. The project is now 4 times its original value of $15 million and is estimated to cost $63 million by the year 2010. Ladner says there has been too much debate between city politicians over both the price and what exactly to renovate on the bridge. Suggestions have ranged from building a pedestrian and cyclist drawbridge to adding reversible lanes. He says the new costs have brought the project into a, quote, new realm where public discussion about alternatives is needed.
In provincial news, a BC woman is suing a Surrey grocery store, saying she was bitten by a spider while picking through the produce. Jessica Rocha DeMori says she was bitten while shopping at the TNT supermarket 2 years ago. The lawsuit filed in BC Supreme Court says she had a severe allergic reaction to the bite, and her hands, arms, legs, and chest and abdomen swelled and became infected. DeMori's lawsuit alleges that the TNT supermarket should have known spiders could have been in the produce and failed to take precautions to remove the spider or post warning signs. Rasha DeMori claims because she had such a severe reaction to the bite, she now has to carry her medication with her at all times to protect her from the deadly results of another bite, and she's suing for financial losses, expenses, and medical costs.
The provincial government is $441 million richer this week after a record-setting auction of oil and gas rights in northeast British Columbia. 3 drilling licenses for the Stewart Creek area, southwest of Fort St. John, were key parcels in the sale. Energy Minister Richard Neufeld seemed extremely pleased by the sale, especially because the government received about $300 million for more drilling rights than they had anticipated. In the past, though, the BC government has tended to give conservative revenue estimates at budget time, and then after the sale has been finalized, announce large budget surpluses. Neufeld says, however, that this windfall was a surprise to him, and that this auction had blown his predictions way up. Neufeld believes that the rising gas prices may have something to do with this record $441 million windfall. NDP environment critic Shane Simpson criticized the provincial government, saying that Gordon Campbell is being inconsistent by boasting about BC's large oil reserves while at the same time taxing motorists for gas consumption with his new carbon tax. The environment minister notes, however, that most of the gas rights auctioned off were for natural gas, which is considered to be a cleaner fuel. Burning natural gas emits less sulfur, carbon, or nitrogen than burning oil or coal, but still does contribute to global warming. It's time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news coming up after these public service announcements.
Plague Community Services Society of BC is calling out for volunteers for the KidStart Mentoring Program. The KidStart Mentoring Program matches kids 6 years old and older with an adult mentor. This program is similar to the Big Brothers, except geared towards kids at risk, vulnerable to addiction, crime, abuse, and family crisis. At this moment, there are 243 children and youth waiting for a KidStart volunteer. To volunteer or for more information regarding the KidStart Mentoring Program or Plea Community Services, please visit our websites, www.plea.ca and www.kidstart.ca.
Come join the free evening gala talks of the 3rd Annual Wall Summer Institute for Research on June 23rd and June 25th. To reserve your tickets, call 604-822-1291. The Peter Wall Institute for Advanced Studies at UBC will bring together invited participants from around the world to explore the implications of a globalized capitalism for the future of agrarian society. On June 23rd from 6 to 7:30 at the Sheraton Wall Center, Jomo Kwame Sundaram from the United Nations will present Washington Rediscovers Agriculture, the Political Economy of the Agrarian Turn. And on June 25th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Freddie Wood Theater at UBC, Emmanuel Wallerstein from Yale University will speak on the return of the peasant. Possible? Desirable? Both of these events are free, but tickets must be reserved in advance by phoning 604-822-1291. Once again, that number is 604-822-1291.
Come join the free evening gala talks of the 3rd Annual Wall Summer Institute for Research on June 23rd and June 25th. To reserve your tickets, call 604-822-1291. The Peter Wall Institute for Advanced Studies at UBC will bring together invited participants from around the world to explore the implications of a globalized capitalism for the future of agrarian society. On June 23rd from 6 to 7:30 at the Sheraton Wall Center, Jomo Kwame Sundaram from the United Nations will present Washington Rediscovers Agriculture, the Political Economy of the Agrarian Turn. On June 25th, from 6 to 7:30, at Freddie Wood Theatre at UBC, Emmanuel Wallerstein from Yale University will speak on the return of the peasant. Possible? Desirable? The events are free, but tickets must be reserved in advance by phone at 604-822-1291. Once again, that number is 604-822-1291.
I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Sheila.
And we're both single moms. We started SPOC UBC, Single Parenting on Campus, an AMS club, with the hope of drawing attention to the additional challenges single parenting students face on our campus. We want to create a space for single parenting students to find resources and support.
Our first meeting will be held on Tuesday, November 6th, from 11 to 12:30 at the Women and Gender Studies, WAGS building right next to Brock Hall. We welcome all single parenting students and, of course, allies. And please remember that your children are always welcome.
Please help us spread the word by informing any single parenting students that you know about our group. We're also open to receiving anecdotes or stories from single parent students regarding their time spent at UBC.
Feel free to drop by our meeting on November 6th or send us an email at spoc.ubc@gmail.com. We really look forward to hearing or seeing you.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:13. Terry Fox's famed van is making a second trip across Canada. With more on this and other national news, here once again is Charlotte Nobles.
The 1980 Econoline Ford van that carried Terry Fox across Canada during his Marathon of Hope has been recovered and began yet another cross-country journey on Sunday in St. John's, Newfoundland to raise more money for cancer research. The van had been abandoned since Fox had to cut short his run in Thunder Bay in September 1980. Its whereabouts had been unknown until 2006 when author Douglas Copeland was approached by a guest at a party in North Vancouver who had recently read his book on the 25th anniversary of Fox's marathon. The guest told Copeland that the van was in Vancouver and had been used by an East Vancouver heavy metal band to tour across North America. With the help of Ford Canada in Oakville, Ontario, the van was restored to its former glory in order to begin its newest journey. At the van send-off, Fox's mom, Betty, said her son would have been thrilled to see his van restored and on another marathon. For more information on the van and its tour, you can go to www.tourofhope.ca.
A group of scientists is calling on the federal government to release its report on the cancer risks of asbestos. Health Canada hired seven scientific and medical experts from around the world last November to examine the risks of asbestos. The experts submitted their report in March, but haven't been able to review it since. Now, two of the scientists who worked on the report are appealing to the agency, saying that they were told the report would be made public within weeks, but it still hasn't been released. Health Minister Tony Clement's office said the report will be made public once officials have had a chance to review it. But experts say the delays are unacceptable. They note that the issue of banning certain forms of asbestos, such as chrysotile, has been debated in the House of Commons recently, with politicians stating the substance is safe despite what the authors found. Leslie Stainer, head of the School of Public Health at the University of Illinois, says some are making erroneous allegations about what the health report says in order to reach political objectives, without the public having access to the truth. Canada is the only developed nation still producing asbestos, which has been called a deadly threat by the International Labour Organization, the World Health Organization, the International Association for Cancer Research, and many more health agencies. The World Health Organization has estimated as many as 100,000 people from around the world die annually from asbestos-related diseases.
In China, the death toll from the major earthquake in Sichuan province has exceeded 65,000. Now, soldiers and police are continuing to frantically attempt to clear up a debris-clogged lake, which has been threatening to result in a massive flood. Rescuers carrying 10 kilograms of dynamite each are staging an explosion designed to blast the rocks and rubble out of what is now being called Tanjiashan Lake, a giant body of water that has pooled in the clogged Jianhe River. Thousands of people still living in the area have fled due to flooding fears. The lake is one of about 35 quake lakes that have formed the 7.9 magnitude that have formed after the 7.9 magnitude earthquake struck on May 12th in the central Sichuan province, triggering landslides that sent debris piling into lakes and rivers. An estimated 14 million homes collapsed during the quake, leaving millions in desperate need of shelter, food, and clean water. Premier Wen Jiabao has already said he expects the death toll to eventually surpass 80,000 from the May 12th earthquake. Aftershocks have made the recovery efforts more difficult, including one with a magnitude of 6.0 that hit Sunday. It leveled an additional 71,000 homes and left 200,000 more in danger of collapse, Jinhao said.
Thanks, Charlotte. And it's time for another break. But when we come back, we'll hear some international news from our friends at Free Speech Radio News. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Men
Menstruation, the Final Frontier. This is the research of ZEMCOR, its continuing mission to explore strange yet familiar body parts, to seek out new information unfamiliar to the medical profession, to boldly go where no man has gone before. Tired of frantically raising your shields with those unexpected periods? Fed up of not really understanding what's going on in the nether regions of your space? Come to the Center for Menstrual Cycle and Ovulation Research and learn how to live long and prosper through all phases of your cycle. ZEMCOR can give you the tools to chart your way through your cycle so it seems like a safe space rather than the outer reaches of the galaxy. Our prime directive is to educate women about their bodies so they can have peace and a long life. To that end, we're recruiting volunteers for a menstrual cycle and ovulation study involving a personal log and urine samples, all completed in the privacy of your own quarters. Participants must be between the ages of 20 and 40, have menstruated in the last 3 months, and not be taking any hormonal medications such as birth control pills. Resistance is futile. Set your coordinates to www.semcor.ubc.ca or call 604-875-5960. We are the Center for Menstrual Cycle and Ovulation Research.
And if you look into a book, you might just say, I had fun just like Run, DMC and Jay. Uh-huh.
Flash your friends a CITR card and get discounts at Lucky's Comics, RX Comics, Magpie Magazine, People's Co-op Bookstore, and Spartacus Books. Support CITR and pick up your card today.
On Thursday, May 29, at 7 p.m., come down to Tom Lee Music Hall for The Beautiful Struggle, a film screening of the documentary Diamonds in the Rough.
Ugandan youth culture has seen the recent emergence of hip-hop music as a culturally relevant and politically viable means of conveyance of positive ideas, political change, and community outreach. The documentary Diamonds in the Rough explores the lives of several young Ugandan hip-hop artists inspired to create politically and socially motivated music to spread their message of peaceful change to their communities and the world. The film will be followed by a Q&A with one of the stars of the film, Salas, followed by a rare live performance.
That's Beautiful Struggle, Thursday, May 29th at Tom Lee Music Hall, 3rd floor, 929 Granville Street. For more info, visit www.beautifulstruggle.ca.
Welcome back to News 101 in the Summer. I'm Katie Comley, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Right now, it's 5:20, and we're moving on to international news. In Chile, students are protesting changes to their education system. With more on that, here is Free Speech Radio News.
Heavy rains and flooding have killed five people and displaced thousands in south-central Chile. Road and rail bridges have collapsed. Many in the capital are without drinking water, and many schools remain closed today. Despite the deluge, hundreds of high school and university students protested a new education reform bill in Congress that they say prioritizes profits at the expense of education. Demonstrators shut down a number of high schools, and earlier this month, students at four universities went on strike. Free Speech Radio's Jorge Garretón has more from Santiago.
This week's actions and earlier street demonstrations follow years of student opposition to the country's education system that boiled over in 2006. Then high school students took to the streets, shutting down schools for more than a month in the so-called Penguin Revolution in reference to their uniforms. The movement forced the ousting of the Minister of Education and the installment last year of a presidential commission. The commission, made up of educators, education administrators, school operators, and students, tabled a report that was the framework for the new education legislation. In committee discussions, students demanded clauses that allow for profit-making from public funds in the education system be removed, but it was rejected by most committee members. Students say the basic principle of profiteering by private operators in education remains in the new legislation. Profit was introduced to the education system during the military dictatorship as part of introducing market forces to the public sector. The dictatorship also dropped schools into the laps of unprepared municipal governments, telling them to compete for students with individuals that opened new schools. Students are demanding that the new bill be withdrawn and redrafted with the profit provision removed. David Mora is the vice president of the Catholic University of Valparaíso Students Union.
We are mobilized because the Presidential Commission that prepared the education bill did not remove from the proposed legislation the issue of profit-making with public funds earmarked for public education, as we demanded it in the commission. The government has failed to reject the concept of profiteering with public funds. We want them to do so. That is our position. That is why we oppose the new legislation.
Another major demand is public funding to public universities that now only receive limited and unequal funding between universities. Many public institutions are in financial peril. Chile's education system is made up of three segments: public schools, private schools that receive public funds, and truly private schools. The conflict is in the private schools that receive public funds operated by individuals who are more concerned with making money than providing education. Also, students demand that public schools be run by the government. Students charge municipalities do not have the capacity to operate schools. High school student leader Matias Ponce says the new education legislation must be withdrawn.
It is extremely important. The president let us know what she thinks, because during the State of the Nation speech, she did not do so. She failed to discuss the flawed bill that is being debated in Congress, a bill we want withdrawn.
But the center-left government does not appear moved by the students' mobilizations. Administration spokesperson Minister Francisco Vidal says the bill is in Congress. Now it is up to elected officials to debate it. Vidal says the decision lies with the people's representatives, not with school assemblies.
Students are calling for the end of profit and the rejection of the new education bill. Chilean society has to make a decision on where public policies are debated. In a democracy, they are decided in Congress. Another option is they be debated in the student assembly. Chile's decision was to listen to all stakeholders, but the place to make decisions is Congress.
The government wants the bill approved because there is an agreement with the right-wing opposition to approve the legislation as drafted. That includes the controversial profit concept. Meanwhile, students will continue to demonstrate against the bill. For FSRN, this is Jorge Garretón in Santiago.
And thanks to FSRN for that piece. We're going to have another piece of international news now. A much-loved teacher in Boston is being deported back home to the Ivory Coast, much to the dismay of his students and colleagues.
Agents with the U.S. Bureau of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, acting on a judge's order issued in 2004, this week deported a popular Boston high school teacher. Obinutuman came to the United States in 1992, fleeing repression against teachers in his native Ivory Coast. In 2005, following protests by staff and students from his school and intervention by Senators John Kerry and Ted Kennedy, the math teacher was granted a 2-year stay of the judge's order. But since March of 2007, he's been living and working in legal limbo. Dave Goodman has our story.
His lawyer had been warning him for months that U.S. officials might take action against him at any time. But when Oben Atuaman arrived Tuesday at the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office in Burlington, Massachusetts, for his regular quarterly check-in with ICE agents, he wasn't expecting to be detained and then deported the next day without so much as a phone call to his wife. Agents took his wallet, leaving him without any money. ICE officials in Massachusetts refused to answer questions, but spokesperson Paula Grenier made the following statement.
Mr. Atuaman has been removed from the United States. He was removed from the U.S. based upon a final order of removal issued by an impartial federal immigration judge. It is ICE's job to enforce the judicial orders of removal.
Oben Atuaman admits that he misread the date for his asylum hearing, but says he has obeyed all rules affecting foreign nationals working in the United States. His attorney, Susan Cohen, characterizes the government's approach to Atuaman's case and all such deportation cases as rigid and inhumane.
The law is too unforgiving the way it's written. And when he missed that first hearing, it was a completely innocent mistake. This should never have, we should never have gotten to this point, because the immigration judge should have been able to exercise discretion to allow him to have a new hearing. The law required her to order him removed in absentia. And that is the source of the problems that happened in O'Bain's case. And that requirement, without further discovery as to the reasons behind these situations, why people miss their hearings and that kind of thing, is the source of the problem.
Cohen, whose Boston law firm is providing pro bono assistance, says several visa petitions were filed with Immigration and Customs Enforcement prior to Atuaman's deportation. These include a request that the Bureau take into account his marriage to an American citizen and his status as a full-time teacher in the Boston public school system. ICE, she says, has neglected to act on these petitions. Peggy Kemp, the headmaster of Fenway High School, where Atuaman taught math as well as study skills to students with special needs, says the popular teacher leaves behind a very distraught community.
It's devastating. We have invested about 4.5 years in trying to obtain legal residency for him. I'm worried about the message that it sends to our students. I'm worried about the loss of our community. I'm worried about his safety. It's really, really hard.
3 years ago, when it looked as though Atuaman would be deported, his students held public rallies and traveled to Washington, D.C. to enlist help from Senators Kerry and Kennedy. A bill was passed by the Senate that stayed federal action for 2 years, from March 2005 through March 2007. Attempts to reach Senator Kerry this week were unsuccessful. In addition to his work as a teacher, Atuaman was active in the African cultural scene in Boston, producing a regular showcase for African musicians. Colleagues were expressing hope this week that their friend would be allowed to return soon. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Dave Goodman in Boston.
And thanks, as always, to FSRN for their pieces. Right now, it's time for this week's weather forecast with Selena Ferris. Selena?
We are looking at a cloudy, damp week as a few weak fronts pass over the area. Overnight, there is a slight chance for some thunder showers, which will turn to scattered showers by Tuesday morning. This trend of scattered showers will continue week-long, with highs in the high teens and lows down to 12 degrees. That's your five-day weather brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
Thanks so much, Selena. And that's our program for Monday, May 26th, 2008. Today's newscast is brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email us at news@citr.ca. Cary Baptist produced this radio program. For more news, join us next Monday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Katie Comley thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Track coming.